This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. You know that one friend who always knows when to book, which card to use, and somehow ends up in the airport lounge every single time? That's Smart Travel, but in podcast form. Smart Travel helps you unpack travel finance. You'll learn when it's smarter to book flights with cash instead of points, and when splurging on lounge access might actually save you money and sanity compared to another sad airport sandwich. Upgrade trips, not bills, with NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you still there? To delete this message, press 7. To save it in the archives, press 9. To hear more options, press 0.
What are you talking about?
Welcome back to another Curious Tourism postcard. This is our monthly episode where Katie and I stray away from our usual format to have a fun and candid chat about the latest travel news and updates from in and around the travel community. Hi, Katie.
Hello there.
So we actually have some fun news to share, which is that Curious Tourism got onto the shortlist for the TPEX Award for Best Travel Podcast.
Woohoo! Finally, yeah. Our day had come.
I know. We did not win, but that's okay because being on the list is still an honor.
Yep. We are an award-nominated podcast, officially. I think we were already, but I think it's been years since our last
I think last time it was like a specific episode that got nominated, but this time it's the whole show, which is Woo-hoo. Exciting.
Well deserved. Yeah.
And actually, our network, Voyascape, which is a network of travel podcasts, had several shows that ended up on the shortlist. So, yeah, shout out to Voyascape.
So, yeah, insert crowd applause here.
I also want to just tell you that, I don't know, do we talk about it on the show? Do we talk about bears a lot on the show?
I don't know, because I think this you and I have talked about bears so much, just personally.
I know. Sometimes I don't know if we've talked about something on the podcast or in our real lives.
Anyways. I don't know if bears have come up on the show. I don't think so.
Katie and I often talk about bears, mainly because like we're fascinated / scared of them, which is just like what it is to be a Canadian. Yeah. Because we have a lot of them here.
I may have mentioned on the podcast before that I am black bear safety certified. I've been trained.
You are?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I have gone most of my life never encountering a bear on the trail, which is why I wanted to talk about this. But I just came back from Vancouver Island, which is where I had my first on-trail bear experience. And little scary, but I'm alive, so we're good. And I think it was a good little like immersion experience for me, because I think I've like had a lot of fear about them because it was like unknown.
You went on a full-on grizzly bear viewing experience kind of thing, right?
Yes, but that was like consensual. That was like a consensual viewing of bears.
Okay.
Then later in the trip, I was on a trail and it was not consensual.
Okay. Please describe this encounter.
I turned a corner and there was a bear right there. A black bear, a really big black bear.
I thought you messaged me and told me that a bear was like following you down a trail too.
So I immediately stopped. And so we started like walking the other way and we just started yelling, which is what you should do. Not yelling, but just like talking loudly to make ourselves known to the bear. And the bear followed us for like maybe a minute. Like a distance away, but it was still spooky. We were like, why are you following us? You're supposed to turn around and go the other way.
We've done all the protocols here. So you didn't learn the whoa bear protocol?
Like just saying, whoa bear, hey bear?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we did.
Yeah, you're supposed to just like back away.
Just talk.
Slowly and go, whoa bear.
Yeah. Whoa bear. Or hey bear. I was taught hey bear. Yeah.
I learned whoa bear when I was on Ontario Forest Ranger when I was 16 years old. And then, mind you, it was a pack of 25 teenagers learning this all together. The whole rest of the summer, we were just, anytime someone would be slightly aggressive, we would just look at them and go, whoa bear.
Whoa bear.
Whoa bear. And like,
that's
was
funny.
That was the phrase of the summer. It was great. I'm so glad you had a safe and exciting and friendly bear experience.
Bear encounter. The great irony of this is the reason we were on this trail was we were hiking to a river in hopes of seeing a bear. You can't control nature, folks. You cannot.
No, you cannot.
All right, let's get into it. So I have a story to tell you that happened recently in late September. Around that time on TikTok, I started seeing videos surface of a multicolored fireworks show, and it was erupting across the foothills of a Himalayan mountain.
I think I saw something like this. Okay.
I was wondering
please
if you
continue.
Had.
Please continue.
So this high altitude display of fireworks was designed to resemble a dragon. And the design was by a Chinese artist. I can't pronounce their name and I don't want to butcher it, so we'll include it in the show notes. The display went off at an altitude of over 5,000 meters, so very high. Mm-hmm. And it was in Tibet's Shigatse region, which is just above the Himalayan range, so just above Nepal. Okay, so before we dive into unpacking this fireworks show, I'm curious to hear how you feel about fireworks in general.
I am a romantic, so I enjoy a fireworks show. However, don't love the amount of like sprayback that there is from them. Like I've been to fireworks shows that are maybe a little too close and like garbage always ends up, like ashes always end up flying on you and stuff. I feel like there's an environmental factor that's probably important to consider with fireworks.
Yes.
But I do like a fireworks show.
I know. I similarly feel a bit conflicted. I grew up in Ottawa, which is a big fireworks town, especially around Canada Day. Ottawa is also home to like a fireworks festival that happens every summer. So growing up in Ottawa, like I was like constantly seeing fireworks.
Sorry, a fireworks festival is crazy to me.
No, really. It's like, I forget how it worked, but it was like different countries would come and it was like a festival where like each country would put on a fireworks show. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like they've become like over time less beloved. And I think it's like for the reasons you quote, like some people are just increasingly aware of their negative impacts. Like they really do have bad environmental impacts.
Especially when you're experiencing a drought. I'm always concerned about fireworks happening.
Yeah. And also sound pollution, which can be quite scary for some people. Can also be scary for animals. I actually hadn't seen a fireworks show in years, like probably since I lived in Ottawa. But then this summer, Luke and I just happened to be in Ottawa. And of course, there was a fireworks show happening. And we just like stumbled on it. It was kind of funny. It was like the night before my brother did Iron Man. Like Iron Man was the next morning, which is a huge triathlon. We were just laughing. We were like, they would do this to all the people that are trying to go to sleep because they have to get up at the crack of dawn for Iron Man. So my next question is how you feel about the brand Arc'teryx.
I don't know that brand.
You don't?
I don't know her. No.
Okay. So it's a Canadian company.
Okay.
It was founded in Vancouver in 1989. It's a very popular brand for outdoor apparel and equipment. You see people wearing a lot of it in BC. I do see it in Toronto because there's a subset of Torontonians who love to dress like really outdoorsy, even though they're living like city life.
I think those people normally go to Patagonia, though, don't they?
Yeah, Patagonia is a big one. But Arc'teryx, I would say, is like up there with Patagonia in terms of like outdoor clothing and like aesthetic stuff. It's a pretty like trendy brand, at least in Canada. I would say it's pretty bougie. Like I don't own anything Arc'teryx because I just like can't bring myself to spend the amount of money you need to spend to buy Arc'teryx. Like it's like a bougie outdoor brand. So the reason I bring them up is because this brand is responsible for the Himalayan fireworks show.
Oh, interesting.
So they partnered with this artist to set off the massive fireworks display as an artistic performance. And it was meant to double, of course, as a marketing stunt. So I feel like I've kind of set the stage for where this is going. But I'm curious what you think about this as like a marketing stunt. Like, how do you think the public reacted to this?
Well, I think I know that people were not very pleased. But I will just say my first reaction when I saw the video of this, I think I only saw it like a couple of days ago. My first reaction is I've seen too many like Mission Impossible movies where an explosion happens on a mountain and then a huge avalanche starts. And so that was my first reaction when I saw this video was I thought it was going to end in that there was going to be a huge avalanche happening down the mountains because of just the sheer amount of explosions happening there. I don't know if that happened. I don't think that happened, but that would be my first concern with this whole thing.
To my knowledge, there was no avalanche, but that doesn't mean there weren't negative effects.
Yes.
So yeah, it sparked a lot of criticism online. And the main criticism, which I think is valid, is that people are saying the stunt contradicts Arc'teryx's image as a conservation-focused brand. Some people are upset enough that they're calling for a boycott of Arc'teryx clothing. Mm-hmm. The issue is that the mountains are too fragile for fireworks. So the explosions, the color, the smoke, experts are saying like this has likely caused lasting harm to the Himalayan ecosystem.
Wow.
It probably damaged glaciers. It definitely impacted soil stability and it definitely impacted wildlife. Mm-hmm. I think you'll have to fact check me on this, but I think like they put out a statement saying like no wildlife was harmed. But like,
how do you
I'm
know
sorry.
That?
Sorry. That's a hard sell to me. I saw the video. I don't know that that's true.
It's a lot. Like, how many fireworks were there? I think there was like 100, weren't there? Like, they were all in a big line, all different colors.
Yeah, across a whole ridge.
Huge. Yeah.
It does leave residue. Like, fireworks leave garbage behind, which is the greatest irony of it, because this brand, like, actively promotes leave no trace principles. And the stunt is like kind of the antithesis of that.
How do you make that decision? It's just bringing me back to Emma, the German AI creator.
I know,
who's British.
I feel this is going to be a running theme in these episodes. Just like who greenlit this? So obviously they've apologized. They put out a social media post saying that the event was in direct opposition to our commitment to outdoor spaces and that the spectacle was aimed at raising awareness of mountain culture.
Where was the mountain culture? Just the fact that they took place in the mountains?
I think so, yeah.
Because
like mountains to me represent like clean air and like wildlife and like fragile natural ecosystems, which are like the very things that fireworks pollute and disrupt.
There is no other words to be said, Aaron.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing is like the mountains, the Himalayan mountains are sacred to the people of Tibet, where many people are Buddhist. And so it's not even just like the nature and the wildlife. It's like cultural preservation. It's like they're messing with a cultural piece that's important in Tibet.
That they're trying to bring awareness to.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. Okay.
It just don't make any sense.
No. So they also said that they're going to work with an external agency to assess the project's impact. They have said, like, they used entirely biodegradable materials. The artist, who has also been criticized, has apologized for his role, and he said that he would work with the authorities to help in the area's recovery. And I thought this was interesting, too. I've also read that some critics argue that local authorities should share blame in this as well for approving the display. It is a question why an event with such obvious environmental risks was allowed in the first place. Like, that would have had to be greenlit by the region. That's sort of like the fallout to what's been happening with this fireworks show. But I think the most like troubling bit of it all for me, aside from the fact that the mountains are sacred, is that there's reports that debris was left behind on the mountain. And so local Tibetans have been climbing the mountain to clean it up. Unpaid.
Isn't it having the principle of leave no trace, isn't it the bare minimum to clean up the mess you made?
Yep. Yep. This is like really frustrating to see because I feel like brands these days sometimes lean into provocative stunts for online buzz, like even if it risks backlash. And I'm not saying like they did this on purpose. Like, who knows? I don't think anyone will ever know. They could have been sitting in there being like, let's do this. It's provocative. It'll get us in the news, which it did. Like, here mm-hmm. we are talking about them. Like, maybe they just didn't care that it goes against their values. But like, it really comes off as a greenwashing stunt. So even if you're going yeah. like provocative, it's like, it's wild to me that they would take it to that level.
It fully comes off as like a performative stunt. Because I don't see how backlash is something that you want. Like, you don't want negativity associated with your brand. Like, it fully reads performative greenwashing and like ignorance. Like, the greenwashing is obvious, but the cultural stuff too is also performative. Like, there are no dots connecting that bring these things to a firework experience. And maybe that's just because I don't understand art. Like, maybe I'm just not an art person and I just didn't read the art well enough. But to me, it just doesn't read anything. It doesn't read anything.
I mean, it was a beautiful fireworks show, but it's not rooted in the values that this company
yeah.
supposedly upholds. I think that a good alternative would have been to sponsor projects led by Tibetan artists and like local community members that could show mountain culture from their perspective.
Yeah, like, it's not a spectacle, culture, Aaron. They want a spectacle.
I know. Or like a user-generated campaign where people can like share their mountain moments from like all over the world, and they could like project that onto a mountain face. Like a map showing like all the mountain moments, which would have like tapped into this like, let's like do the spectacle thing, but also like bring in the stories of people.
That's a really cute idea.
At the end of the day, it's just always so frustrating that like responsible storytelling, like particularly by brands and in marketing campaigns, just doesn't perform like controversy does.
Okay, so I wanted to talk to you today about Bad Bunny. How familiar are you with Bad Bunny?
Not very. I just know that they are a beloved artist
yep.
from Puerto Rico.
Yep.
And that they have been performing in Puerto Rico. But I can't say I couldn't name a song.
Bad Bunny has been pretty much exploding all summer. He had a two-month residency at a venue in Puerto Rico, where he is from and grew up. And he was due to go on tour around the world after this Puerto Rico residency. But he came out and announced that he wouldn't be doing any shows in the U.S. because of fear of ICE coming and arresting people at his shows. So he's been pretty outspoken against ICE. And so this was also part of the reason why he really wanted to do this Puerto Rican residency. So this residency was really cool, though, because I did some more digging into it. And it's like, yes, this is where he grew up. So he's like stoked to be supporting his hometown. The venue that he played at has got like a 20-year long history. It's called the Coliseo. And this was like one of the most significant events that they had ever seen, that they'd ever put on. And people were coming from the U.S. to come to Puerto Rico to go see Bad Bunny. And I don't know how much you know about the Taylor Swift impact on the U.S. economy from her tour over the last like few years, the Eras Tour. The Eras Tour contributed $4.3 billion to the GDP of the U.S. just from people following her around, going to hotels, supporting local economies and all of that stuff. The one thing Taylor Swift, I guess, does that's good in the world. Sorry. Sorry if you're a Taylor Swift
She's
fan listening
still
to this.
A billionaire.
but anyway, so basically Bad Bunny had sort of the Taylor Swiftification impact in Puerto Rico, in his own home island. This was especially significant since Hurricane Maria happened in 2017. Over 3,000 people were killed during the hurricane. So they were ready for some infrastructure boosting and that kind of thing. Here's a quote from the article. In the 20-year history of the Coliseo itself, or in the entertainment industry of Puerto Rico, there's never been something like this. It hasn't only been impacting the San Juan area. This has impacted the whole island. People who come for Bad Bunny stay in local hotels, eat at local restaurants, and even spend money on Bad Bunny-themed tours. Fans want to see his childhood home, the grocery store that he worked at, and so much more. And people are saying that this is set to have like a pretty good ripple effect on the economy there. They say that the ripple effects will keep bringing people to Puerto Rico, with the fans who saw Bad Bunny in concert leaving as ambassadors for the island, especially as people don't want to hang out in the U.S. as much anymore. So, yeah, I just thought this was like a really cool story. Bad Bunny is set to perform at the Super Bowl in February.
Wow.
And he recently opened for the new season of SNL, and in it he did part of his monologue completely in Spanish and then said at the end, if you didn't understand that, you have 4 months to learn. I just love to see this and hope to see it more. So Bad Bunny is not still going to be touring the U.S. He's going to, I think he just finished up his residency in Puerto Rico and then is set to tour most of the Caribbean, Latin America, and then in Europe. So good for him.
Nice.
I love to see this.
Me too. My only question is, like, I guess, like, that tour is done now, or that residency is done now, but I thought that ICE could operate in Puerto Rico.
I looked this up because I was like, I thought Puerto Rico was a state technically, but it's not. It's technically a territory of the U.S., but they are completely self-governed.
But you are self-governed. A U.S. citizen. But I think you're a U.S. citizen if you're in Puerto Rico.
I think it's almost like Canada is to the U.K., where they're like completely self-governed, but we are part of the whatever it's called. Yeah, the Commonwealth. So I think it's something similar to that. And also I think the fact that it's an island too might just be deterring ICE agents from going there. I don't know. I don't know. But I think he did 30 shows. 30 at this one residency.
I really appreciate artists that give extra love to their, like, where they're from.
Over the last 3 months, Bad Bunny has drawn an estimated $200 million to the local economy so far, according to local economists. And they expect that after the residency ends on September 14th, the final tally will be even higher. So I don't know what the final tally is now, but yeah, $200 million to an economy that was, like, needing it. Good for you, Bad Bunny. On the note of artists contributing to your local economy, there's been some interesting commentary as well, because Taylor Swift was, as I mentioned, touring all of this year, doing her Eras tour all over the U.S., as I mentioned, contributing $4.3 billion to the economy. She is not set to do a tour for a long time for the next few years, right? So I will be very interested to see kind of how that impacts the economy. I don't know if it'll be anything to like write home about, but I think it is interesting to know how much she's really contributed over the last year, and that you won't be seeing that money really spent that same way.
I mean, but I think it's like beneficial to think about it in like the broader context, because if it's not a Taylor Swift show, like it'll be another artist. Cause like the same goes for Beyonce and like any of these massive artists, they all draw these huge audiences that travel and spend tons of money. I think the Eras tour was just like a bit more extreme, but like there's lots of artists that do this. So I think of it more like every city like has a motivation to attract these artists, because regardless of who's performing, they'll generally bring in money. Yeah, I'm not like up on like mainstream artists enough to know like who else is out there on the scene. I know that Beyonce's tours like bring a lot of money as well, though.
Mm-hmm. Sabrina Carpenter is probably going to be touring
She's pretty famous. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm also curious to see if more artists end up doing the same sort of thing that Bad Bunny is doing. Obviously, he has a much tighter connection with the Spanish community. I would love to see more artists like with a point
of
view.
This is what I appreciate about it. Like, even though I don't like listen to Bad Bunny, like I don't know any songs, I appreciate that he is political. Like that is a political statement, and he recognizes that he has impact and that he has influence by being a beloved artist. And I really like when artists like use that for good. Like this is like my my main criticism of Taylor Swift these days, it's like she has tons of power and influence and impact, but like she's very quiet about everything going on in the world right now.
Oh, Erin, I don't know if you've been reading all the commentary about her new album, but I sadly...
Oh, I have.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah.
Fascinating stuff.
Fascinating stuff, but this is not that type of pop culture podcast, so well, I will refer so everyone...
I will say...
Yeah, go.
When I was living in Montreal... I was, of course, like, I'm a 90s kid, so I grew up with Arcade Fire and was, like, very into Arcade Fire. And when I lived in Montreal, for context, like, if, for people who may not know, Arcade Fire is, like, a little indie band originally from Montreal that, like, blew up. Like, I guess they're pretty well known now. So when I was living in Montreal, they were already quite famous, but they would come back to Montreal at least once a year, and they would do free shows. They would shut down St. Catherine, which is like the main strip in Montreal, and they would just play a free show one evening for the city of Montreal. And I just always loved that because it was just them saying like, we love you. Like, we love this city and we're going to perform for you. And I just loved that it was always free because they really wanted everyone to be able to enjoy it. I love that.
Great. I think I actually read that the first 9 of the 30 shows that Bad Bunny put on in Puerto Rico were for people local, like local attendees.
Like restricted to locals to buy tickets to. Yeah. Also love that.
Super cool. Yeah.
It's wild out there, the scene for buying tickets to things. I was trying to get Lucas tickets to see Paul McCartney because he's doing a tour and like... Just like could not, I was ready. I was like, I'll pull the trigger on this because like you love Paul McCartney. Like he really does. And I was like, he's old. Like this will probably be the last time you could see him. But Luch was like, no, I can't like wrap my head around that much money. Great. I didn't know this about Bad Bunny. So all I knew was that he was performing in Puerto Rico. But yeah. It's nice, like you say, that it's had such a positive impact.
Hopefully Bad Bunny is setting a standard there. And also not normalizing the fact that like the U.S. is the only place to go and support the economy. Like you can go touring Canada too, aka all the artists that never come here. Come to Canada. Jeez.
You know how Celine Dion like announced that she was going to do another run of shows in Vegas?
Really?
I
did not know this.
That was my first thought. Oh, I know. Because I was like, I have to go. Like, because I need to see Celine live. But I was like, why wouldn't you do it like in Canada?
Yeah. Do a residency at the Casino-rama in Brantford. Like,
well, I was thinking just like do like a whole like run of shows in Montreal where she's from.
I know. And not make all the Canadians go to the States right now, too, would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please. So, yeah. Celine, if you're listening, please consider.
Stay in Canada. Stay here, please.
Well, this has been a good chat. Thanks for this postcard.
Thank you.
If you're listening and you would like to hear us talk about something specific, feel free to DM us. You can DM me on my Pina Travels account, or you can email us. All our contact stuff is in the show notes, so just pop into there if you want to reach out. Oh, you can also leave comments. If you're on Spotify, this is like a new thing. You can leave comments below episodes. So you could do that too if you're using Spotify. Oh, also, you guys should review us. Please leave us a review. We never do this. We're so bad. If you're listening and you enjoyed this episode,
people say that it helps with the charts, but it doesn't. It's just nice for us to read. No.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you want to make our day, leave us a review.
Yeah.
A nice one, though.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Ciao.
Hi, I'm David Brody, co-host of the Travel in 10 podcast. Together, myself and my co-host Tim Johnson have traveled to over 150 countries around the world and all 7 continents. Now we're sharing our favorite places, some of our best tips and experiences from all around the world in just 10 minutes on Travel in 10. Join us at voyescape.com.